Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery, a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm one of those makers. My name's Ben Harrison.
Over here is Adam Pranica. Ben, I think this is a really special day in the history of The Greatest Discovery program.
Yeah?
And it's
what makes you think that?
Because something happened today that has never happened in the history of our show. And I'll tell you what that is. Star Trek Discovery news actually broke this morning before we recorded the show.
Really? I have not been keeping up with the news, you know?
I know it's a shock because, we have a pseudo recording schedule. We have a firm release schedule. And so often on this show, we'll record and release a show and then news will happen the next day. And then
yeah.
We won't have anything. We won't be able to comment on it for another couple of weeks. But here's what happened this morning, Ben. Star Trek Discovery announced the Short Trek schedule and gave us a teaser preview, which is what it's called in the biz.
How is this blindsiding me right now?
I'm blindsiding you. I'm giving you the news live on the show. It's great. Anyway, these Short Treks, the first one's going to come out on October 4th.
Okay.
Which is right around the corner. That's
coming right up.
That's almost 2 weeks away, I feel like.
Yeah, we'll be playing a show in Vancouver, British Columbia that night.
And then they're going to come out monthly through January. So the first one is called Runaway. It's the Ensign Tilly episode. Comes out Thursday, October 4th, followed by Calypso on Thursday, November 8th. That's the Michael Chabon episode that you've been looking forward to. Intently.
How do I get dragged every time I correctly pronounce something in French, but you can get away with calling somebody Michael Chabon? that's like calling it Target.
How do I really pronounce it, Ben?
Chabon.
Thursday, December 6th is The Brightest Star. That's going to be a short episode based on Saru. And then the last Short Trek is going to be on Thursday, January 3rd. It's called The Escape Artist, and it's the return of Harry Mudd.
I read that Harry Mudd one is, the writer of it is one of the writers of Rick and Morty.
Written by Michael McMahon and directed by Rainn Wilson.
Pretty fun.
Yeah. I am super pumped that we get new Discovery to talk about as soon as 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
And more every month thereafter. I mean, there's not much to see in this little Short Treks trailer. It's a total, like, they show you 5-second clips from all of these,
yeah,
all these little
sure.
short eps, but something to be excited about in the coming months.
I'm pumped for that. I think we'll keep our normal release schedule for this show during the Short Treks episodes, really, so... Like, for example, for that October 4th episode, I think we have a
Greatest Discovery scheduled to come out on October 9th.
That's
so
right. Yeah.
We will be in your earbuds talking about that ep in our next episode.
That's right.
Well, that is super fun. I can't wait. I love Tilly. I can't wait to see her episode.
Yeah, I'm glad she's starting the show.
Yeah. What a smart move by CBS to have there be something to tide us over like this.
We've got some hard candies to chew on before the meal comes.
Yeah.
That's how you consume hard candies, right?
I don't know. I'll take your word for it, Adam.
Little pre-meal hard candy. Yeah, I don't know anything about hard candy or meals, Ben. But what I do know is that this episode is about comic books.
Yeah, the other content that we have to tide us over, and we just started reading. I think this was the first Star Trek Discovery comic series that they put out, The Light of Kalos.
Yeah, I was excited to read these books because it gives you the opportunity to do that great Vok voice that I've come to know and love. So, Ben, why don't you introduce the show in your best Vok, and we'll get started.
Well, we read issues 1 and 2 of the comic, so why don't we get into Star Trek Discovery, The Light of Kalos. So we start with the hulk of the Klingon ship of the dead kind of decaying in space. It really looks rotten, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It looks like a bunch of mold just in the shape of a starship. And this is in the kind of immediate aftermath of the Battle of the Binary Stars. And they're on board this ship talking about how the supplies are going to dwindle if they don't get their act together and fix their ship up.
They're in media res on the banquet of Georgiou, I guess.
Yum, 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 yum.
Gnawing on some skull.
Yeah.
You want to go low and slow on that skull probably, right?
I don't know. There's not a lot of meat on a skull, right?
Yeah. I mean,
do you think brain would taste good or would it be gross?
I think I apologize in advance to all of our veg.
It's not cannibalism because there are different species.
Our veg and vegan audience members out there. But the face is sort of one of the great pieces of an animal to eat.
Yeah.
And I imagine if Georgiou is anything like pork, then I feel like her cheeks have got to be real delicious. Got to get those Georgiou cheeks.
I ate some horse face one time in Canada.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, it was delicious, but I also, like, sometimes look back on that choice with regret. You know?
I'm pretty sure our dogs eat horse face all the time.
Yeah, and anybody that's eaten in the canteen at an IKEA. So don't act like you guys are all morally superior to me. At least I knew what I was doing.
Yes, for you it was a choice, Ben.
I mean, I made the wrong choice, but I made that choice.
I think one of my favorite kinds of stories is the let me tell you a story kind of story. And that's what Light of Kalos number one is.
Yeah, it's a bit of it's Laurel walking up to Vok and saying, Vok, if I could draw a comic book, do you want me to tell you what the comic book would be? And Vok goes, yeah, lay it on me. I'm really interested to hear about the comic book you would like to draw.
Laurel's sort of like kind of crawling up his ass about his leadership style. And it's like, you know what? I see you kind of struggling, W/R/D, the leadership on this ship. Let me tell you a story. Hey, let's rap about a guy we know and love named T'Kuvma.
And so we're on Kronos, and it's the color gets a little muted, or muted in a different way. I liked that it kind of has a almost a sepia effect.
Yeah.
To tell us we're in the past, and this is little boy T'Kuvma, which is a character we actually see in the show, and this is made me wonder whether these comics inspired those scenes in the show or vice versa. because Kristen Baer, again, is one of the writers on these books, but also in the writer's room on the show.
What little we see of young Takuvma on the CBS show is of him being bullied and harassed by his family and friends, and we get more of a taste of that here.
It's a part of life for him, and I feel like any shitty thing a Klingon does to you, it's all in the service of becoming a better Klingon. Like, they're beating the shit out of him and going, this is for your own good.
You know how when people are mean to you, like right now, something that people say occasionally is like, God, what a dick. Do you think, like, if you're a Klingon, you're like, God, what a couple of dicks, but you're talking about one person?
Man, yeah.
Like, nobody, it kind of like, changes your whole perspective on what you call people, right? Like, are you a dick's head?
A dick's bag?
Right. Really makes you think.
That guy's a real dick holes.
Boy, did you see what happened to him at work? He really got his dicks put in a couple of vices. Boy, you really don't want to use the bathroom in that rest stop, Ben.
No.
Saw a couple of glory holes in the stall there.
Do you think that a Klingon bathroom has two urinals next to each other and then a partition and then two urinals next to each other and then a partition?
God, that is a great question, because I feel like, man, I guess it would depend on if they kind of walleye out as they dangle away from the body, or if they go out and then come close together toward the end.
Was it one over the other one in the scene that famously depicted the guy peeing? Was it two streams stacked on top of each other?
It was stacked streams, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
So maybe, I think what we're talking about is, like, you know how sometimes you'll go to an older bathroom and that urinal will go all the way to the floor? Like, it'll be like floor to chest urinal?
I love those type of urinals.
So do I, yeah. And I think that's what they're working with on Kronos.
Do you think that there's two little fly icons to aim at to prevent splashing?
Do you think you could kind of braid your dick? Like, if it were flaccid?
That's a real sign of how much you're packing.
Yeah.
Like, I could get three braids in it, baby.
Like, you look like one of those dog toys.
If you're braided and then you get tumescent, that could be big trouble, though.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll break something down there, I think.
Yeah. Another thing I thought was remarkable about the Klingons in this book is we see a lot of hair and facial hair. And in this scene where he's getting beat up, there's one of his brothers has like a ponytail.
Yeah, he's rocking a pony.
We have confirmed Klingon hair, Adam. These are not hairless Klingons. They're shaven.
It's nice to have an answer to that finally.
Yeah. So to escape this beatdown that he's getting, young Takuvma runs into the woods, and this is a very spooky Fangorn forest looking place, and he comes out the other side, and it's a little bit LV-426 when he comes out the other side. There's the hulk of the ship we will come to know as the Klingon Ship of the Dead, sitting on the forest floor in a big clearing, and he enters it and runs into his big sister.
I think these frames of the forest are maybe my favorite frames of any Star Trek comic we've seen. Like, with the light rays coming through the branches and like 10,000 little pen strokes.
Yeah.
In those frames, I really think they're amazing.
It makes it feel like insecty and creepy. It really puts you in an environment. It's a very visceral drawing.
Yeah, I think it's some of the best artwork that we've seen since doing the comics project. It's really awesome. And when you contrast it against like that last panel of Takuvma being surprised by the sarcophagus ship, there's like 30 line strokes there. There's so few on his face comparatively. It's really striking, the contrast.
Put yourself in this place.
So his sister is on this ship. This is Jula. She is pursuing a project of rebuilding this thing, and she kind of starts to tell him a story about the past and how they are members of a nominally great house that is not doing that great mm-hmm. these days. And this ship was a big. I mean, it seems like it was like the military industrial complex of their house gone wild.
Yeah,
like they built this huge ship, but they kind of went broke doing it.
Yeah, I mean, the family's been down and out for a long time, and this is like the rust bucket in the barn under the car cover, you know? Like, it has the potential to bring them a great bit of pride and maybe unify the houses in the process.
Yeah, and so she gives him, like, this VR headset. It's very intricate. It's pretty... I don't know why it would need to go over your nose and mouth. I feel like most of the VR things I've seen just do eyes and ears, but maybe this one has smell and taste virtual reality also.
When you're putting on a VR headset, you want to make sure that you put the VR headset onto the small child next to you before putting it on yourself, right?
I thought that was the opposite. But I guess with VR, you're compromising your senses of what's actually around you.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to put on a VR headset onto someone else if you pad yours on first.
Yeah,
it's
fair.
It's inversely instructional here. I am with you, though. I don't feel like this is necessary to tell the story, like, especially because when we see what Takuvma sees, it's like, it's not great. Like, it's not like all she's saying is she's basically showing him a map, right?
She's prepared a little PowerPoint deck about what her plan is for the future. And it's about, yeah, like their house and how the walls of it have receded as their uncle and father and grandfather sold things off to cover their costs, but sold off things that were generating money and power for them. So
it's weird that, like, she uses augmented reality technology to show him, like, how the borders have changed. But they don't use it for the ship itself, like, so that he could see what
it could one day look like or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting scene. I mean, she's really pissed about it, about how this house has declined in this way. And it's not because they've been losing fights, which I guess would be maybe more honorable in a weird way.
Right.
It's that they've just, like, it's economic mismanagement.
Yeah, it's a lot like House of Quark.
Yeah, totally. But she also tells him about her intention, once this ship is fixed up, to head to Boreth. And Boreth is the planet that the Klingon monks live on and study the ways of Kaelas. Or, as I'm sure she said it in the untranslated Klingon, Kaelas!
Yeah, they both, like, come to this conclusion that it's going to be great because both of them are going to get to go and spend time in the Kaelas Sweat Lodge.
I think this is the caves that Worf goes to mm-hmm. when in the Rightful Heir episode, like where they they wind up cloning Kaelas, bringing him back that way.
Yeah, it's at this point in the story that it kind of forks, right? Because we see the contrast between how shitty Takuvma's life is at home and how many prospects he has whenever he goes to the ship. You get to see kind of a montage of his uncle being a shit to him and him being treated like the son that no one likes, like the kid at the table that no one likes. And then we'll like cross cut right into him training with people on the sarcophagus ship and getting a lot out of it and like gaining the respect of people through his effort.
Yeah, he's learning to be a fighter, and that's different from just getting his ass whooped by his brothers every day.
Do you feel like there are more than one white-skinned Klingon people on this ship? Because there's something about the artwork in this comic that was confusing, which was like they shade a lot of the Klingons very light to very dark, and some of the lighter-skinned Klingons look just as light-skinned as Voke.
I wondered about that because the guy that he does most of his training with, Kel, definitely appears to be light skinned, but that's something that's like a really big deal in the show, but is totally uncommented on in this comic book. So I don't really know. maybe he's not, I don't know, maybe, yeah, maybe it's just that the drawing is misleading or whatever.
Or, I mean, I could understand why it's difficult to draw six different Klingons six different ways. I'm sure skin shade was a big part of differentiating them.
That could be it. I mean, I definitely had a few moments where I had to like go back and remind myself like what shirt Takuvma was wearing so that I could be like, who's this in this fight?
It's easy to get lost a little bit in some of these scenes.
Yeah, I mean, we had the same problem watching the show. So.
Right, yeah. Funny how that works.
Yeah. Toward the end of this issue, there's a scene in the crypt of the House of Grach. It's the uncle, like, complaining that he's had a sarcophagus carved up for his brother, and he doesn't think the workmanship is that good. And amidst complaining about the workmanship being not that good, he suggests that Takuvma become the apprentice of the carver, who's also the father of the guy he's been learning to fight with.
Now, when you're carving a sarcophagus, you're going to want to make sure your likeness is as close to the real thing as possible. I like to use the rounding over bit to start with a rough outline of the Klingon loaf.
We're using a whittling jack to do some of the finer detail work. We've purchased a 16-piece wood carving set from our local hardware store. We recommend looking for a high-carbon chisel, which will hold its sharp edge for years to come.
You want to sand the burrs out of the sarcophagus using a fine 1,000-grit sandpaper, and then a nice coat of lacquer will give it the shine you want in your very dimly lit crypt.
We're leaving the bottom of the sarcophagus fairly rough so that when we use adhesive to affix it to the hull of the ship, it'll get a nice good grip. But that's a story for next time.
I wish one of us had a good Kevin O'Connor. He's so like anonymously like everyman voice, like,
yeah, he has a little dab of Boston, but mostly it's just an unremarkable plain Jane voice.
And he's great too. Like, he's a guy who was never hired for his voice. He's got a great voice, but he's just like almost anonymously everyman contractor guy.
Unparadisable.
Yeah. Yeah, too bad for us.
But yeah, the Takuvma actually rides for not becoming a coffin carver's apprentice, but going to Boreth to his uncle. And his uncle surprisingly loves this idea, basically makes arrangements for it post-haste.
I mean, that's what his wife likes about him, right? He's spontaneous.
Yeah, he keeps it fun. But yeah, this is a bit of a surprise to the light-skinned dudes that are there. And Takuvma goes to tell Jula. She fronts like she's pleased, but the second he walks out of the room, she is like smashing shit and leaving her hands bloody, which indicates to me that she is quite upset indeed.
Which is strange because like the button on the issue is that like she's not surprised that this is how it is because of the gender norms on Kronos. Like, I don't think she ever thought that she'd be tapped to go on this trip.
I mean, that's why she was rebuilding the starship. She wanted to go do it herself.
Yeah.
Like, without anybody's input.
You're outwardly happy for someone's success, but inside you're just seething. And that's Ja'ula's deal here.
Yeah. So the last page is on Boreth, and Takuvma is making the on-foot approach in a little Red Riding Hood cape. How did that work? Did he beam down a kilometer from the place and just have to walk in the rain? Why not just beam into the place?
When we took that lift into the city to watch Star Trek VI at the Cinerama, the traffic was so bad. We got like six blocks away and we were finally like, fuck it, we'll just walk the rest of the way. Maybe that's what Takuvma did here. Like, traffic too bad. You know what? I'll just get out here.
It has been nice riding with you. 5 stars. Good conversation. Clean automobile. Friendly driver. Good music selection. Nice tea.
At this point, we decided to go right into issue two. I think we didn't discuss why we did, but I feel like issue one was pretty short and ended kind of abruptly and didn't give us a ton to talk about.
I don't know if I had been just kind of a civilian comic enthusiast, if I had bought the first one when it came out and was on the stands, would I have even come back?
Yeah.
I'm glad I stuck around because issue two was pretty lit. But,
this is one of those comic series that really forces you to be the sort of comic book buyer that has like their pull shelf where like you go to the comic store and it's waiting for you, because if a month went by from reading issue one into issue two, you're right, I'm not sure that I would remember how important it is to get issue two of this, given how little happened in issue one. Especially if you have watched Star Trek Discovery on TV, like nothing is revelatory. Nothing is super revelatory at this point about the story we're getting.
I mean, and I kind of wish we had read this while we were watching the show, because I feel like I would have understood the significance of Voke and Laurel more.
Right.
We've talked a lot about how in those early episodes, it was hard to know who was who among the Klingons and why we should care about any of them. So we jumped right into issue two. And again, we are starting in the conversation between Voke and Laurel on the ship of the dead. We're getting back into it with them. One thing I liked about this was every time they're talking, it starts in a little box with the Klingon icon, and then there's an asterisk, and it says translated from the Klingon.
Yeah, I like that.
That was fun.
Laurel and Voke look great in both of these comic books. I think they look screen accurate.
I think the art style in this is awesome.
Yeah,
I mean,
me too.
It's kind of etched.
Yeah,
looking.
They really do well territorially, like with the artwork too. Like when they go really big with scenes, like in that forest scene and in the cauldron of Taklapok scene, like they do great in large format.
Yeah, and that cauldron scene is definitely like either one entire, like I'm reading this on an iPad, but so I just have to speculate, but that looks like you're like opening the comic book and that's spread across two pages kind of a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been reading, some of the, J.K. Woodward TNG comics lately just for funsies. And I, by the way, got dragged by JK on Twitter the other day because he listened to the episode where I suggested maybe we focus on Discovery Comics.
Yeah. Finally, someone takes my side.
Maybe we should start a beef with Go Trek Yourself. It's Greatest Discovery versus Go Trek Yourself.
The problem with that beef is that I actually like that show. I want to beef with someone I don't like.
Jay-Z and Nas actually liked each other and respected each other. They started that beef to amplify record sales.
Yeah?
Yeah. All of that stuff with like Minister Farrakhan helping them squash it and stuff was publicity.
Who's our Minister Farrakhan?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a good question.
I think we need one of those. I mean, I'm inclined to say it's Jesse Thorne.
Yeah, but he's kind of in the bag for us because we're on his network.
Yeah.
What about Brandon Bird? He combines the discipline of artistry and the enthusiasm for Star Trek, and I bet he could be pals with JK.
Good nomination. Let's put him up on the board.
Or our friend John Adams, also a Star Trek comics artist.
If you're in the comics game, I wonder how well you know the other people in that game.
Well, it's a big industry, you know, it's very, very hard to know everybody.
But I will say, Laurel has a deep respect.
This cauldron scene is pretty rad. The idea is that there's this kind of pit of lava with some stone columns that are naturally formed throughout it. And these Klingons that are training at Borath are asked to kind of challenge themselves to sit there and deal with the heat. A lot of the challenges in becoming a Kahless-like Klingon here seem to involve nudity.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, in the medium of comic books, it was a little bit more permissive in terms of what you could show, but we never see a dick.
We never see two dicks, Ben.
Yeah, we don't even see one. Not even one of them peeks out.
Do you think if you see one dick in a Klingon context, it's partial nudity?
Yeah, that's a PG-13. If you see both, that's full frontal. That's a hard R.
Yeah, you can't do that. Kind of a neat idea. Like, everyone is in the hot box and they've got chains above them, right? And it's sort of a who can outlast the other situation here.
And it's a chain that's dangling down to a level where it looks like you'd have to, like, jump for it and then haul yourself up the chain.
Yeah, that chain's got to be hot too, right?
Yeah.
That's going to really hurt your hands.
Yeah, and they got those big, long, pokey fingers. Those don't look like they would be great for doing anything.
Yeah.
Like, you know when you see a lady with very big fingernails and she's, like, trying to type something on her iPhone and it's just a real challenge?
Yeah, you need a typing wand in that scenario.
Yeah. I feel like all of these Klingons are going to have a tough time with a smartphone.
Yeah. Well, Takuvma is doing great at this challenge because he's the last guy who wants to leave. And this catches the eye of the teachers down there. These teachers are Durgin and Belor. Durgin's the guy with the cool long mustache, and he's kind of the hard ass of the faculty. And Belor is probably what you'd call, like, the easy A. He's got lower expectations.
Yeah, but he also has clearly been through some shit because he has, like, a major slash scar across the side of his face. Like, an animal clearly took claw to his face at some point.
I mean, do you want to be shoelace mustache guy or do you want to be claw scar guy if you have to choose your look?
I mean,
choose your look.
I'm pretty sure I'm claw slash guy because both. I would probably be a pretty chill teacher that wasn't a hard ass at all.
Yeah.
And also, like, let's be honest, I would get my ass kicked by an animal at some point.
Belor is everyone's favorite teacher, clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like he's the hardest, but he's the easiest. I like
bet
that.
You wish you could grow a mustache like that one guy.
That's why I'm saying I would want to be Durgin, like, for facial hair reasons alone.
So another challenge that they have to do is go out in the nude and walk around on these kind of Himalaya-like icy, snowy mountains. And this is another opportunity for Takuvma to prove himself able to withstand temperatures like no other.
Yeah, I mean, it's double the shrinkage here, right?
Yeah. Maybe that's why they don't show the dicks in this scene, is they feel like it wouldn't be representative of what the dicks really look like. If we show full-frame dick here, people will think that Klingons have small dicks.
Do you think if these guys fell down and made snow angels, like it would look like there were two sets of wings?
You're saying the dicks are articulated and also moving up and down like the arms?
Could you counter-rotate them the way a burlesque dancer counter-rotates her tassels?
I feel like if they were side by side, maybe you could, but since they're...
Since
top
we believe
bottom.
Them to be canonically up and down, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why that makes me think you couldn't do it, but it does.
Man. What do you think you call the piece between the dicks? Like there's a piece of skin between the dicks, right? There has to be.
Well, Adam, I think that's pretty obvious. They have two dicks, but they also have two taints.
Wow.
Are there four balls? And are they in two different scrotums, or is it like one scrotum with four balls in it?
Here's what I'm going to say, and I'm going to, like, here's where I'm putting my money. Like, this is not just a theory. This is, like, what I actually believe. I think it's a single sack of balls. They're just bigger. I don't think they have the room for two sacks. It's just too much going on. They're not walking around like
they're... Maybe the Klingons keep their balls up inside their bodies to protect them in a fight.
Yeah.
That'd be a more tactical way to do it. I mean, I've often wished that I didn't have balls in my trousers. And
so that you could wear a more tailored pant?
Yeah, a more tailored pant, but also, like, on a hot day, I feel like they're mostly just a nuisance. You know? They're going to do something at some point that's useful, but they haven't yet in my life.
I don't know if I just have weird balls or what, but I've never felt like they're a nuisance.
What are you, Mark from Peep Show?
Yeah, no nuisance. I think I'm good with them. there's this thing that happens that's kind of like Ruripente-esque. Like one of the joggers falls down, but instead of leaving him out there as an example for why they don't have stockades or walls or anything, Takuvma picks him up and like fireman carries him. It's the light within, Ben, that that allows him, that gives him the greater strength. Let me tell you something about fireman carrying a person with two dicks. Like, just looking at this frame, like, the dicks need to pick a side, right?
Oh, yeah. You think one goes on front of the shoulder and one goes down his back?
That's what I'm saying. Like, dick logistically, I have a lot of questions.
Logistically?
The second issue really asks a whole lot more than the first.
Yeah. Do they have two buttholes, do you think?
No, don't be fucking ridiculous, man.
Oh, maybe they have three.
That is
a
childish question.
They can do one flavor or the other or a swirl.
Jesus Christ, Ben. These are a proud race.
So the teachers are like standing out at the edge of the school and are convinced that their initiates have all perished in the cold, and they see Takuvma carrying one of them back and leading the others, and it really seals it for them that this light that he saw meditating in the cauldron is a real thing, and it's not quite what, you know, the vision they had hoped he would get. It's not a vision of Kales, which would indicate that he is the reincarnation of Kales, or like the person in whom Kales will manifest. But the light is a good sign, as far as they can tell.
This is a lot like that rightful heir TNG episode, right? Where the faculty kind of argues amongst themselves about like what is sufficient or insufficient as a sign that Kales is coming.
Yeah.
And the hardliner, like Durgin, is actually the guy who's like willing to allow for light being sufficient. And Belor's like, fuck that. Like, if we all can't see the light, then like this could just be like a magic show.
Yeah. We just have to take his word for it that he had this great vision of a light. Who hasn't seen a light?
Yeah. I don't think Belor's going to give him very good grades. I think this is going to really disappoint Takuvma here.
His GPA is plummeting by the moment. But they tell him he's learned everything there is to learn here, and they say, you got to get back to Kronos because your sis is getting married, and she's getting married soon.
Yeah, and evidently Maker's Mark is sponsoring the reception because the letter comes with like a red wax seal. You know what? Wedding receptions are expensive, Ben. I think it's fine. It's fine if you get a sponsor.
Just sending out invitations cost us a couple $100 if memory serves, because there's so many different parts. There's like the envelope that you're meant to put the RSVP part in, and then just a pain in the butt.
A lot of people reach that decision of like, are we going to serve hard alcohol at our wedding? Our wedding was so small that it was an easy choice. Yes, was our answer. But a lot of our friends see that as like price not even having to do with it, as an invitation for disaster. Sure. Where did you come down on the hard A thing?
We served a full bar. I was a little dissatisfied with it because we got married in a public park in Los Angeles, and that meant we had to pick from the vendor list that the public park provided us. Like, only like a handful of companies have the correct kind of insurance to serve booze in a public park. None of them are like oriented toward the mixology enthusiast kind of crowd. It was a pretty basic open bar setup with not really fantastic options, but it worked.
I thought the options were great as an attendee. I thought you did a great job with it. At first I was a little bit puzzled by your decision to have it at a public park, but then as soon as we got there, I recognized it as the park from the Nothing But a G Thing video where they played volleyball and then smeared fuzzy stuff all over those girls' breasts while they were playing. Like, that really brought it home for me.
I was not aware of that. Is that true?
No, it's not. Like, retroactively, we can say that it was.
Fun. So they get back to... He gets back to Kronos, and he's a changed man. He's been on Borath for years. He's got the robes now. Like, he carries himself very differently.
He's that guy who comes back for the high school reunion 20 years later and is like jacked. And people are noticing.
I used to kick that guy's ass. Now he could kick my ass. Yeah, so he, you know, has kind of a not great interaction with his brothers when he gets back.
One of his brothers is rocking a real push broom mustache, though.
Yeah, with the moosh. He's got the mustache with the moosh.
Yeah, that's not a good look. That's not a good look for any Klingon.
It's like such a 90s move.
That guy should be teaching shop class. That guy's the real Marc Maron of that house.
Yeah, he kind of is. Podcasting in the garage of House Gerja.
Lock the gates!
I didn't know that House Gerja was a cat ranch. But also, he runs into his big sister, who has... she's really grown up. I don't know if this is her wedding garb, but she's got kind of a stylish getup on. Like a...
Hey, you want to wear red on your wedding day, huh?
Yeah. Like a coat that has like a kind of a skirted hem and then pants and like tall over the calf boots. She looks like she could be like the sheriff of Nottingham or something in this getup.
She's got CMMBs on. Come marry me boots.
And she takes him over to the ship, and it still looks like a moldy piece of shit on the outside, but when she takes him in, it is back to its former glory. It's looking great.
Yeah, it's kind of like in the automobile parlance, kind of a sleeper, right? On the outside, you can't tell what it's got under the hood.
Yeah, or like those houses that you see in LA where you drive by them on the hill and it looks like a door to a very small house, but the house is actually like below grade because it's down the hill from the street.
Right.
So it's really huge inside.
I like all space over here for entertaining.
That's a lot of space.
The conversation that they have on this ship is kind of melancholic, you know, like she's really abandoned the dream that inspired her to fix this ship up, to focus on the idea of reuniting the Klingon houses. And T'Kuvma has been doing his part to work on that project by, you know, learning the ways of Kalas. But she really has walked away from it, and she tells him that like it was really the common folk that I guess are like indentured to their house are the ones that really did the hard work here.
I don't like getting my hair cut too short because of my melancholic. Yeah, it's like there was never any kind of good feelings about this marriage from the start. What there was hope for was for this ship.
Her place as a female and therefore like an asset of the house is something that she really resisted in the previous issue. And like reuniting with her years later, she seems to have really resigned herself to it in these scenes.
Yeah, she's changed, man.
Yeah, it's really crushing. She shows T'Kuvma one of the features of this... of this whip.
It's the novelty horn and the song that it plays. You're going to love this.
And then they've painted a Confederate flag on the hood of it, and they take it off a jump.
Kel is kind of a useful character in this scene because like we can perceive that Ja'ula has changed. And her priorities have changed as a result. But it really takes Kel going like, yeah, man, like things have sort of gone to shit since you've gone. The ship is like the thing that keeps us together. Like it's a commune for people who still need it. It's a good place to be, but like the reasons behind it existing have changed. And Kel is a guy who used to love Ja'ula.
A lot has changed. Kel even looks like more grown up,
yeah,
which I really liked. Because I feel like T'Kuvma, his growth was, you know, there's a nice chiaroscuro. Hmm. You don't necessarily notice the change over time.
Yeah.
But like the second you see him next to Kel, you're like, oh, Kel's all grown up. And yeah, like T'Kuvma looks like T'Kuvma from TV show, not like 9-year-old T'Kuvma.
Yeah, it helps to have that end goal artistically to have for the aging process. The last bit of advice that Kel gives T'Kuvma is like, hey, man, why don't you hang out with us on the ship. Like, we can feast. You didn't have to go to that wedding. And Takuvman's like, nah, like, the whole reason I came back is to go to this thing.
I already sent the RSVP, and she'd be ripshit with me if I missed it now. You know, they already spent the money on the catering and everything.
She already saw me. Like, we hung out. To ditch on the wedding would be a really bad look. So it's totally understandable that he would go.
It is, but also, like, a little weird that Kel is riding so hard for him not going.
Yeah.
Like, I wish he would just said why.
Yeah. Well, if he said why, we wouldn't have gotten this great surprise.
Yeah, he's a slave to the narrative just like all of us.
Yeah, it's Takuvma going to the wedding, and he sees the fiance, Delore, of House Mokai, in just, like, ankle-deep blood. It's unclear whether or not this is how weddings go on Kronos, but what's happened here is that he's killed all of Takuvma's brothers and is demanding fealty to him.
This is one of those things where, in any other context, I could see a character going like, sure, fealty, you got it, dude, and then, like, not actually acting on that later. But Takuvma has just been dipped in honor, you know? Like, that's all he's been doing for the last few years is, like, becoming a man of honor and integrity. And so he's... I get the sense that shit is going to pop off in the next issue.
What if the foreskin covered both dicks at once?
What? They're both... It's like two sausages in one casing?
Yeah. What about that? What if that's a thing?
Gross.
Just impossible to clean, Ben. Did you like these comics, Ben?
I really did. I'm really glad that we read two instead of just one, because I don't think that this would have been much of a podcast episode if we had just read one.
If you haven't gotten into these, the four have been combined into one long graphic novel. So I think it's probably a little bit less expensive to buy it that way.
Yeah, I might actually order that or go over to my local comic shop, even better, and see if they've got it, because I like reading them on the iPad, but I have a hard copy of JK's book, Mirror Broken, and I've been really enjoying the tactile experience of reading the comic in that way.
Yeah, I agree. That's a better way to do it.
A little better.
Yeah. I like these issues too, Ben. I think we really needed the second one to dial up the tension, because that first one alone just was too much backstory. But I think it's fun to hang out with Takuvma again. Like, I've always found Takuvma a little bit cartoonishly orthodox, and it's nice to see, like, how exactly he got to be that way before he was killed. So it's nice to have some of those questions answered.
It's nice to watch the Noah Baumbach-directed Takuvma at the wedding. Well, Adam, do you want to check and see if we have any Priority One messages?
Yeah, let's do it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, we do have a Priority One message here. It's for Zane, and it is from Rowdia. And it goes like this. Hey, Zane, look behind the couch. And then in parentheses, at work. Just to be clear about which couch to look behind. This maybe should have come out in the last episode or something like that. So apologize if that was a food item
is
behind the couch.
Yeah, a little bit of explanation. We got this Jumbotron request in November of last year with just a request to air it as close to September 3rd as possible. So apologies, we weren't able to do that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But here we are, and hopefully that is not a thing behind the couch covered in mold.
I hope it doesn't look like the Klingon ship of the dead right now.
Yeah.
Well, if you would like to send a Priority One message on the greatest discovery, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. And we really appreciate the support for our little program here.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek Podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one-size-fits-all on a social media platform, or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a comic book drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the nude man that's clambering up onto the bridge in the cauldron scene. He's like apologizing for not being able to handle the heat.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know why Takuvma would know any more than this guy, but this guy just hasn't caught on that there's no excuses in boot camp. It's partly just the way he's drawn. Like, it's so undignified the way he's like clambering up onto the bridge. Like, he's definitely not Takuvma material. I got a kick out of that little guy. Probably the same guy that Takuvma winds up having to carry back
right
in the snow. How about yourself?
My drunk Shimoda is related to two little guys. Two little guys we don't see, because I'm making my drunk Shimoda the artist for these two comics. It's Tony Chastain gets the art by credit here. The reason I'm nominating him is that there isn't even implied double dicks here. And this is such an accomplished artist that we're seeing like textures and shadows all over the place. Like even page 5 of the second issue, like there's frames for dialogue, and then there's like just a background that the frames lie on that is so textured and beautiful. Like, this guy clearly is great at what he does, and yet there is not even a hint of a double dick outline. There's that scene in the snow where like everything is so cutely covered up, and I feel like
it's a bit of an Austin Powers gag, right?
Yeah, and it's the Austin Powersification of it that makes me call it a Shimoda, because like if you just cut the frame at the waist, then it's less, it doesn't stand out as much, but because it's so cute throughout, I really wonder if there was ever a conversation about like how much dick we can show and even if we can show implied dick, but that there isn't even implied dick in two issues of nude Klingons we've seen, and not even anything. I think you could get away with a hilarious half outline of something. Like there's a way you could do it and still make it adhere to the comics code. So I'm going to name Tony Chastain my drunk Shimoda. I'm going outside the comic for this.
That is a lot of fun. Well, Adam, that was a fun ep. And I guess the next one we will be talking about a short trek. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. I'm psyched.
Super
brand
psyched.
New episode of Discovery. Yeah. So many questions.
What are they, like 15 minutes long?
Yeah, something between like 10 and 15 minutes.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
I feel like I could get a lot out of a 10 or 15 minute thing right now.
I feel like we could easily make an hour long episode about a 15 minute episode of Discovery. That's just what we do. That's value.
I wish they would do short treks all year round.
Yeah.
And from all different eras. Like, give me a short trek set on Deep Space Nine.
That would be amazing.
Give me something. I would be fucking flipping out if there was a short trek set in the TNG era.
Good thinking. It's amazing with such good ideas you remain outside the pocket.
I know. Hopefully the pocket is listening.
Yeah. If they know what's good for them, the pocket's listening. This is where all the good ideas are coming from, right?
Yeah, seriously. All right, man. Well, we'll leave it to Rob from here. And looking forward to next step.
Me too.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison. It's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte, and our theme music is by Adam Ragusea. Head on over to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the ongoing production of our show. Or you can leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Please use the hashtag GreatestGen or GreatestDiscovery when tweeting about the show. See you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.